and bounced into the office of the president of a local institution, and lo and behold, his secretary was one of my childhood, you know, playmates. And she said, my birthday is tomorrow. So I wrote this poem. Now, I work out of a system that I refer to as the solar system, and I spell solar, S-O-U-L. So later on, when you see a book in about 3 years, hopefully, if you see a book called Solar System, it'll be me, it'll be by me, and I will have worked this thing out. But what it deals with is how the various cultural lines, intra-ethnic lines, influence a core culture, in this case, Afro-American, and how that core culture, that foundation culture, you know, that gives you your socialization process, that gives you your value system, your ethical system, your sense of right and wrong, your ability to determine what's pretty and what's not so pretty, what's good, what's fine, how that system remains intact, how it absorbs, how it takes in all the other influences, and then reemerges pretty much after the fashion of the line, the continuum that produced it. So anyway, I'm doing a there's a phrase here, solar system, you know, S-O-U-L. So, and we had talked about a number of things. So I'll read first the poem, say a poem for Emma, for old times and all times. Remember childhood solar systems and hand-to-hand combat with the hawk, where everybody was kin, both above and beneath skin. When lithe flowers like you that bent but didn't break formed the foundation for a lifetime of natural highs, especially in our saucy south end, the deepest, darkest end of Black Town, where spicy soul sisters made growing up a flame full of gleams and gladnesses, where everybody was kin, both above and beneath skin. In Hallelujah City, we entered delicious adolescence, delirious with its cigar trees, ragmen and railroad tracks, root beer and bubble gum, night trains and race wars. Just before the black world ended on the edge of a white cloud, and when we wondered what was behind the squeaking door. Flowers like yourself, flowers like our little selves, sprouted and strutted through unlocked doorways in red dress rhythms and high heel fantasies. When the gods were happy, and yes, barred windows were unnecessary to ensure tribal safety. Neither was there the need for all night lights, since our whole neighborhood was a pallet, where everybody was kin, both above and beneath skin. My yard was your yard, and fences were invisible. We were baptized by shared misfortunes that sojourned us into adulthood over the daily screens of pots and pans, of coal lumps breaking, of logs being splintered, of Pentecostal ecstasy, sunflower mornings, firefly evenings, mosquito nights, boogie-woogie, jitterbugging, brown Jesuses on street corners scolding sinners who sip sin through glass straws long as alley playgrounds. Kin, oh, we were kin, both above and beneath skin. Age was obeyed, and senior-wise love of the elder wits helped us cross rites and rivers. Now, like life, you have produced life. Happy birthday, O African daughter of the indestructible dignity. That friend is firm and fundamental, direct. She's raising her children sort of like the way we were raised. This other friend who heard about this poem said, hey, I want a poem too. And she's kind of defiant and rebellious, and she speaks what's on her mind. When I was managing Catherine Dunham's road troupe in the 60s, this then young lady, and still young, was a member of the company, dance company. And Miss Dunham would say, you know, to me, I was working at the time as her confidant, chauffeur, translator, what have you. And we would build a dance. Catherine Dunham, I guess everybody knows who she is. We say she's the Duke Ellington of dance. We would build a dance so that it would be anthropologically, paleontologically, historically, philosophically, culturally, sexually sound. You know, in other words. Then this young lady wanted to wear a blazing set of diamond rings, you know, on her fingers, while she would be dancing, you know, circa Gold Coast of West Africa, 700 BC or 13 AD. And, you know, with a grass skirt and ankle bracelets made out of cowrie shells and rat's teeth and all that stuff. And she wanted, you know, she said, I ain't taking off my diamond ring, you know. So it gives some indication of her personality. And, I mean, it took quite a while to get her to take a ring off. I mean, it was just, you know, cultural and sounding. Anyway, she told me that her birthday was 4/14/44. Her name is Valerie. So this is a microcosmic study as opposed to the macrocosmic study. This poem for Emma, I think, could have been written basically about any other young woman or young man who came along. This one is specifically about Valerie. 4/14/44. She's a very excruciatingly beautiful lady, and as dark as black people come, so you get the references, you know, as dark as you can find a black person. All. It was all. Hey, choice lady who perplexes with the walking language. I mean the right Reverend Whale woman of the indelible indigo dark, and the ambulatory assurance of a seeing eye. Shooby-doo girl, bloom-de-bloom, 4/14/44. Life ooh-la-la ingredient with gravy. Lush electric smile, unswerved sass, plushly ornamental elegance arching over anatomical swivels. She bees the cleanup woman. Uh-huh, African prophecy, uh-huh, African prophecy and a hypnotic pelvis, uh-huh, uh-huh. Olele, olele, tossing mane, elliptical bright black laughter counterpoise against the death serious saber stare. The one that simultaneously kills and reincarnates. 4/14/44. In soul lady, sway sayer, in soul lady. Breath deep, abiding hums, mama history heaving in grim sighs. Mural in imminent motion or enticing tapestry. Either way, some part of your prolific pulchritude always eludes me. You of the contagious, thoughtful joy. Now comes a fiendish frown, grinding against a gnawing cackle, choice, oily bright black laughter, around emerald eyes, rainbowed by evil brows. Now prepare for a piece of her mind. Your frank rap can create a riot. Call, call, girl of the nitty-gritty gem. What wonder of a woman. Two or three more, I know you've been patient. And had a lot of audacity and temerity and so on. Wherewithal and stamina, words my grandmother, you know. Press on, wherewithal, stamina, intestinal fortitude. this poem is part of an exercise that I wrote several years ago for students in School District 189 East St. Louis, which, by the way, created a position for me here recently as cultural arts consultant and poet in residence. And I'm very pleased. I'm working with the children, and I'm very happy about that. I just enjoy it. I mean, it's great, you know, great. Yeah. I mean, it's really, you know, do a lot of things. I could say I wanted to see all 10th grade English classes. You know, I want them bused right here. I want them for the day or for 3 hours. Or I want 4th graders or, you know. And it's really fantastic. I want to take all the ninth graders to a play. You know, I mean, it's pretty flexible. I mean, this is just great. I mean, it's really, really, really fun. It's really, and it's a nice breakaway from that the turgidity of the university. Anyway, I would like for you to, after the fashion of what Mike did, participate in a call and response antiphonal regenerative process. And that you would you say, hey, hey. And at this point, I was teaching the students how to use an oxymoron, which is, you know, a word simply meaning two things that putting together are a word or idea that has within it opposites, you know, combustive forces, like the, you know, classically, sophomore, which means wise fool. So at the end of each line in this poem has something near an oxymoron or a clashing feeling, emotion, idea, or or movement. And I was showing them how, for example, the word funky grace, how they could, you know, funky, which means aesthetic or cultural integrity to these kids, and grace, you know, can be put together so that they could say what they want to say, funky grace, you know, bring it on down. So would you say hey, hey, whenever it's appropriate? I won't tell you when to say it, and that'll indicate, of course, that you're very hip. But let's try to practice on the quality of the hey, hey. Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Now let's do it like Stevie Wonder would do it. Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
When it's appropriate, you do it. He took the lion lunge.
Hey, hey.
He took the tiger step. He took the tomb trail.
Hey, hey.
He took the sacred plunge.
Hey, hey.
He made the ocean leap.
Hey, hey.
He made the gong gong call.
Hey, hey.
He made the debt mouth.
Hey, hey.
He made the freedom creep.
Hey, hey.
He ate the juicy blues.
Hey, hey.
He ate that rat roach flap.
Hey,
he ate the numb stare.
Hey, hey.
He ate the airborne shoes.
Hey, hey.
He caught the sassy space.
Hey, hey.
He caught the totem call.
Hey, hey.
He caught the kill flame.
Hey, hey.
He caught the funky grace.
Hey, hey.
He caught that funky grace.
Hey, hey.
He caught the funky grace.
Hey, hey.
Okay, I think I'll do two more poems if I can beg your indulgence. And one is for Imamu Amiri Baraka, formerly known as Leroy Jones. Leroy Jones, a.k.a. Imamu Amiri Baraka, is a very complex and perplexing figure in American literature. Author of The Dutchman, preface to a 20-volume suicide note, tales, daggers and javelins, great home social essays, has gone through a number of different kinds of changes, continued to evolve to what we don't know, the black darling of the beats, you know, the fair-haired boy in reverse of the Greenwich Village, Washington Square, in bohemian crowd. Then coon black nationalist, pan-Africanist, coon now Marxist, communist. Goes through a bunch of changes, and he and I debate, you know, deep into the night here and there. But a magazine known as Stepping Stones is doing a special issue in tribute to His Highness Baraka. I say that because I'm setting the tone for this spoof. And I was asked to contribute a poem and also to be one of the presiding elder states persons of the arts. At the time that at a huge book party and birthday party for Baraka in July in New York. So you have to know he's from Newark, New Jersey, And he is a self-appointed. His name means that he is great, that he is a poet, that he is a leader. I mean, he selected his name, Imamu Amir Baraka. And so, yeah, so I entitled the poem, The Archbishop of New Art. I wanted arched, past tense, right? The Archbishop of New Art. His blackfulness, his wholeness, his botness, his aesthetic efficient exactness, his hipness, his high frequency Fahrenheit coolness, his downness, his jiveness, outlandishness, exuberance, his brashness and his badness, i.e. full up flame, buttressed by the quick eyes of the dagger fire, balancing bloods and marks, making marks of his own, lurking for the elusive, for the black lidless, for the lumpin' humpin' bourgeoisie. Breakport of the pivot, the pony, the shuffle, the booty green and the rim shop, tack-a-map, 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 tack-a-map. Homeboy and hydro-tongue bard of the Blue Roy, verb pugilist in the service of the peoplehood. When the poem calls, he comes out throwing antiphonal combination, lyrical lefts and rights, rhythmical noun jabs. He lures in the folk ways, this finesser of rhyme and mime. Retractor of doom, gnome flirter, dismantler of occults, divinator. I see your high C, said the dark Grigri. I see your high C, said the dark Grigri, who heals with the ugly language, unfurls aphorisms and unwigs deceivers, a masked man prevailing, archbishop of his ambivalence, worships deities of the dirty diction, and practices the art of prettification, wit conjurer who wordlessly converts with the warm arms of consciousness, speaking to an anxious and enduring moment known as the multitude, AKA people, alias worker. Five will get you some jive, skin will get you some can. Footnote, or can't the bishop burn? Okay. And the final poem is called New York Seizures, and there are two anecdotes. I was drafting this poem when I was on sabbatical in 1977. I had a reading at Columbia University and I had a little time to kill. I stopped at a bar about 114th, which had been extended out to enclose part of the sidewalk, you know, in New York, and St. Louis is getting hip like that too now, too. You know, glassed in bars and, you know, extend, you know. All the hip urban, metropolitan, urbane, witty, cosmopolitan things. Anyway, I was sitting in that sort as a reference to a glass submarine. But I was reflecting on some things. Two things happened, as I said. A man had come from Hawaii to commit suicide by jumping from the Empire State Building. He leaped from the 54th floor, and the wind was so severe that it blew him into a window of the 53rd floor. And he was knocked unconscious, but and the floor on which he landed had all female workers. So he was knocked unconscious, woke up, thought, you know. So you know the story. You know what he was thinking. Thought he, you know, so. Okay. The other story is that I descended the subway steps. Around 118th or so one day, going to a reading downtown. And I saw this man, a black man, who was about 6'8", 6'8". And he had a chartreuse jumpsuit on. If you know anything about New York, I mean, it's already outside, you know. I mean, just saying that. This guy, 6'8", with a chartreuse jumpsuit. And hundreds of little pockets sewn onto the suit. The inseams and everything, right? And in each little pocket, he had some kind of energy-powered gadget. You know, a cigarette lighter, a ballpoint pen with a flashlight with a light on the tip of it. You know, transistor radios, you know, different, I mean, all kinds of stuff. You know, all kinds of gadgets and all kinds of little devices. He had on a pair of roller skates, a huge boom box, some sunglasses, thick, broad, and huge, wide sunglasses, and this hat, this big gaucho hat with space antenna sticking out. So I descended the steps, and I ran past. I saw him, and I looked like that. But the guy looked like, "Go on and look, you son of a bitch, and I'll break you into little pieces." So nobody would look. And I saw that he, there was a test of wheels, you know. And I did, like, every time I would look around, he would crouch and into like a martial arts position, but he was also ready to move on the skates toward me. And I've seen those guys. I mean, they get up to, like, they can get like 60 miles an hour. I mean, they really move. So, but you know, I had to have that enter my consciousness. So I wanted to see him, but I knew the guy. You know, this guy had some problems, and he was waiting. And nobody, people sitting around, you know, little people, older people, tall people, big people, thin people, young people. Everybody wanted to get a look at him, but he was standing there menacingly, just, you know, "I want anybody to take a good look. Just turn around and stare, and I'm going to break you in half." So I said, "Well, this is worth being late for my reading." So I went toward the steps I'd come down, the stairwell, because I had to see him. I got over to the steps like that, to the very first step, and I turned around and just got a good look, say, "Wow, this is a weird cat," you know, with all this stuff. And then I hit the steps, you know, about three or four at a time. And anyway, this guy came after me, I mean, like in one zip, zip, and up the steps behind me. So I, when I got upstairs, I stood between two policemen. and he was skating around, like, just skating around, you know, sort of a real swan dance, you know. Like, and you could tell he knew the whole thing, you know. Gee, you know, he was moving, you know, swordsman. But this guy was ready, you know, real martial arts expert, but just kind of off too, and 6'8", you know, 6'6". So that was quite an experience. Now, neither of these images appears in the poem per se, but they set the stage for how I approached how and when I entered the poem or approached the poem. New York Seizures, 1. I sit in a glass submarine watching contortion consume beauty as flesh enters toward dust and oblivion. What do you want, eh? Or what do you want? As flesh enters toward the next corner of tumult, to where wrinkled octogenarians, spontaneous in their gloom, stagger-stab the grimacing city blocks with lock-legged steps, and broken winds exhale columns of creaking epilogues from eyes without age. No dozer, no doze city and never wink whaler, babbling through Benzedrine and beer. Number 2, now disguised as a street lamp, I am whiplashed into serpentine ecstasy by lush scenarios, by concrete choruses and asphalt furies, by the snaking quarrel of bilingual taxicabs, where the night turns yellow, where New York gets mellow, yeah, and perspiring tenements, tombs for pre-people returning home from mystical voyages to be somebody, by the hover cluster of chuckling midgets who hurl diabolical ring shouts on the thunder tears of gleeful gods, Apollo, Shingo, John Henry, and Bobo, and rocket naughty cliches at bronze brick houses, headhunters, plush stallions, stark deniers of identity, penis flingers, cunt lubricators, sweet boys, and blood borrowers. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, last night, night before, spin your bottom, shoot your shot, keeper and creeper, let me blues you before I lose you. Let me try you before I buy you. I got the Jones, if you got the bone, dick hard as Chinese arithmetic. I ain't talking about your mama with a good old soul. Number 3, the neighborhood next door is hallucinating. Woman says she saw a black Jesus riding in a white hog, wearing a green jumpsuit, and holding two brown foxes. The platinum barrel of death stirs into the stomach of a short order cook, demanding the cash register and life to go. A gentleman who wears a low profile tells his woman that she makes love like his best buddy. A Puerto Rican speaks voodoo with an African accent. A European speaks African with a Spanish accent. A West Indian yawns in Yiddish and curses in Arabic. An African speaks English in silence. A slave revolt occurs under the cover of a blackout. Color-crossed lovers hold hands in cross-eyed Central Park. Subway trains are flying nonstop to South Africa. Harlem has received the Nobel Prize for Peace. Mountain climbers are trying to scale the city debt. The Indians are hijacking the Empire State Building. This winter's snow turns out to be cocaine. 4. Lucid, lumbrous eye, New York. Luminous fragments, like New Year's Eve tinfoils, collect into an epidemic of flesh-ignited candles that refuse to go out, even when the temperamental gods of Con Edison are comatose. Word city, heat forest of memorable fevers, asphalt icon, Jezebel mesmerizer, sleep exempt entrancer, I rap prance my congratulations on the achievement of your excellent madness, on the triumph of your pretty contradictions. I tap dance my salutes through your basements of shuttles and barbiturates. I clop clop along your rib cage of cobblestones. I pee pee in the wee wee hours of your doorways. I me lee in your disco drudgery. I be me in your awesome amber. No dozer, no doze city, and never wink whaler. Babbling through Benzedrine and beer. Thank you.